Welcome everyone to part four of our Pesach Shir. Again, we are focusing on the Haggadah and thoughts from Rav Soloveitchik and Rabbi Sachs. And we left off last time with Manish Tana, so we're going to jump into Avadim Hayinu. So we mentioned in the previous year the Gemara in Pesachim on Daf Kuf Tet Zayin that says, Matchil Beganut U'Mesayim B'Shvach, that we have to begin our Seder talking about the Ganut, the harder, the more sad, the more serious, the bad parts of the Seder, of our history, U'Mesayim B'Shvach, and then we end with the good, with the praise. And the Gemara asks, Ma Ganut, what is it what is the hard part of our history that we're referring to? Right, so Rav says it's the paragraphs of Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah, that our forefathers were idol worshippers, and Shmuel says no, it's we start from when we were slaves in Egypt. And practically speaking, because many of the Rishonim basically say that they both agree that we need to discuss both, it's just a question of which one we start with. That's really what they were debating. But nevertheless, as we know from our Haggadah, we do both. So we're actually going to start with Avadim Hayinu, which is really the reference to Egypt. But then we go back in a little while to Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and then we go through the real details of the Yetziat Mitzrayim. So in any event, we have to start with the harder parts of our history. The Haggadah here says, "V'ilu hotzei Kadosh Baruch Hu," that if Hashem had not taken us out, we would still be enslaved in Mitzrayim. And many commentators ask on that line. It's a little bit odd. But does that mean that we would still literally be in Mitzrayim all these years later? Does that mean that we couldn't have been taken out at some other point? First of all, it's just a technical question that it would sound like, eventually it would have happened. And more so, we know from the Brit Bein HaBetarim that Hashem promised that we would be taken out. So how do we understand this? So a couple of answers I like to share. Rav Soloveitchik says no. Obviously, we would have been taken out at some other time. But the whole purpose of Yetziat Mitzrayim, as we're going to talk about soon, is to have been taken, the Jewish people to be taken through the Midbar to Har Sinai to get the Torah. And had we not been taken out at that moment, Rav Soloveitchik says, then we would not have been taken to Har Sinai. We wouldn't have been on the level to be taken to Har Sinai. And we would not have been given the Torah in that same way. And therefore, we would not have been on the same level. So yeah, we could have been taken out later, but we would have been on a lower level. That's answer number one. One of my other Rabbein, Rabbi Yitzchak Noble, said, if we look carefully at the words, it says, I'm just going to find the line here for you. Ilu lo hotzei HaKadosh Baruch Hu et avoseinu mimitzrayim, had Hashem not taken us out, hari anu uvanenu uvnei vanenu, us and our children and our grandchildren and so on, mishubadim hayinu lepara b'mitzrayim. Right? So literally, normally that's translated, we would still be enslaved. And Rabbi Noble says that that's not what it means. It doesn't mean enslaved, but it comes from the word mishubad, which means to be indebted. That, yeah, we could have gone out at some other time, but then we would have been indebted to Paro for letting us go out. So in this way, we were taken out where our only indebted and gratitude is to Hashem, and that was the whole purpose of Yetziat Mitzrayim. And finally, one of my Rebbeim from Yeshiva University, Rabbi Sobolovsky, adds a similar measure, that the word Meshubad refers to all the negative influences of Paro and Mitzrayim, and that had we not been taken at that time, we would have been so engrossed in those negative influences of Mitzrayim that we would not have been able to become Klal Yisrael as we know it today. Right? We knew we were on the 49th level of Tumah, and we would not have been able to become the people that we are had we not been taken out at that time. Okay, so that's that line. Now we also know that the end of that paragraph, or the middle of that paragraph, says, "Afilu kulanu chachamim, kulanu nevonim, kulanu zekenim, kulanu yodim asatora, mitzvah aleinu lesaper yetzias Mitzrayim." That even if we were all wise people and we knew everything, we still have this mitzvah of sipur yetzias Mitzrayim, And then the famous line, V'chol hamar b'lesaper b'yitzayim Mitzrayim harizim eshubach. And then the normally translated, we'll see in a few minutes, a different translation, kol hamarbe, he who spends a lot of time, right? The more you do it, the more you discuss yitzayim Mitzrayim harizim eshubach, the better it is. So, very important here. First of all, we can ask the question, well, it's a mitzvah, so of course the wise person is obligated. Why would we think that the wise person is not obligated? Why does the Haggadah even have to tell us that? So you might suggest, well, we know the psukim, which later talk about the four sons, where it says in the Torah, V'hayak yish'alcha, when your son asks you, and he got it to Labincha, right? We know all of this idea seems to be coming in, well, when someone asks you, and then you give them an answer. And therefore, one might have thought that the whole mitzvah Sipur Yetzis Mitzrayim is just for those who don't know. And that's why the Haggadah here has to tell us, no, it applies even to those who don't know. Okay, but with that suggestion, then one could ask simply a different answer, a different question, which is, so why are they obligated? Why is it important? If they know it all already, why is it important for them to partake in Sipur Yetzis Mitzrayim? They're not learning anything new. Certainly, right, we're going to see in the next paragraph the big tzaddikim, tanoim from the Mishnah time. Certainly, they knew everything, so to speak. They knew the nisim v'niflot of Hashem and what He did in Mitzrayim. So why should they have to do it? So I think herein lies a very important principle for what the Seder is about. And what I often like to say is that Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim is not about what's in our heads, it's about what's in our hearts. And it's something really important to keep in mind as we go through the Seder and we try to talk about all the great Divrei Torah that are being shared, and all that is so important, but it's important that we focus on where that leads us to, that it not just remain in our head. So we know the Gemara says, and it comes up later in the Haggadah, B'chol dor v'dor chayv adam lirot et atzmo ki ilu hu yatza mimitzrayim, that in every generation a person has to see himself as if he went out of Mitzrayim. That's the main point of the Seder. And essentially, how do you do that, right? Can we envision what it was really like to be a slave? Baruch Hashem, none of us have been enslaved. We don't know what slavery is like. Although there is probably still slavery in the world today, we don't really see it and know from it. So how is it that we're supposed to do this? So interestingly enough, the Rambam, when he quotes the Gemara, says, "Behold, v'dor chayv adam liharos," with a, he adds in a hey to make this very point that we actually have to do actions to make us feel and to see as if we've experienced this freedom. And again, what Rav Chaim Friedlander in his famous work Siftei Chaim says, that essentially what a person has to do is to envision what he thinks is the worst chore in the world that one could possibly do, and imagine what that means for him, what slavery on our level would be, and to imagine that you had to do it for a day, a week, a month, and so on, and a year, 5 years, 10 years, imagine how bad and how hard that would be. And then he says, imagine, right, you are finally, your knight in shining armor comes along and saves you. How grateful would you be to that person? So it's the same idea here, and we mentioned this in the last year, that really the whole point of Yetziat Mitzrayim, and that's why it's Matchil Beginud Misayim B'Shvach, that we start with the heart and we end with all of the nisim and the neflot, and ending up with the good. And that's what we said, the whole point of the Seder is to come to say Halal at the end, right? The whole point is that we come to experience this Yetziah, this Exodus, and that we come therefore to appreciate Hashem and to thank Him. And one last point on this idea, this last line, V'chol amar b'lesaper Yetziat Mitzrayim harizim eshubach. So as I mentioned before, the normal, typical translation is that the more you do it, the better, right? Which typically is a good rationale for those of us who want to have a very long Seder. It says the more we talk about Yetziat Mitzrayim, the better. But there's an explanation from Rav Yeruchim, the former Mashkiach of the Emir Yeshiva, who says, no, it doesn't mean like Harizem Eshubach, the more the better, right? The more you do it, the more praiseworthy it is. Rather, it comes from the lashon of meshubach, to be uplifted. That the more we do it, the more we spend time at night, at the Seder night, discussing the nisim v'neflot and what Hashem did for us, the more we will be uplifted. The more we will become an uplifted person, a higher level person. And again, before we go further, I think it's important that we recognize that that is the purpose of the Seder. The purpose of the Seder is not just to do some nice customs and relive some actual actions that were done. It's to bring ourselves to a higher spiritual level. Along those lines, the Sifte Chaim also says that, and this is really, I think, the next point that's really the main point of Avadim Hayinu, of the entire Seder, and that's why, by the way, this is the answer to Manish Tana. The entire purpose of Seder night is encapsulated in this paragraph of Avadim Hayinu. We know that the Torah says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha asher hotzeiticha me'eretz Mitzrayim mibeit Avadim, that Hashem is the one who took us out from Mitzrayim mibeit Avadim, from the house of slavery. And the only difference is that we know that the Jewish people look at freedom differently from the rest of the world. The rest of the world looks at freedom as, well, now I was enslaved, now I'm free, I could do what I want. Judaism doesn't look at it as I'm free to do what I want. It means I am free from the slavery of my master, my previous master, and now I am an Evan Hashem, and now I'm a servant to Hashem. We know the Pasuk also says in Shemot, Paragimel Pasuk Yubet, when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, Tovit Dun Es Ha'elokim Al Har Hazeh, to worship Hashem with the lashon of Tovit Dun Eved, to worship Hashem on this mountain. And Rashi in the Sforno on that pasuk says that the idea again is that when we were taken out of Mitzrayim, the whole purpose was to get to Har Sinai to become Avdei Hashem, to become an Eved to Hashem. So we were free from one Avdus to become a different Eved. But obviously the difference is the first Avdus was a bad one for us, and this new one, the purpose, is a good one for us. Now the question really is, what does this mean, Tov Dun? Why is it that we look at being a Jew as a servant to Hashem in the language of an Eved? Why is that? And we often know that there's a phrase called Kabbalat O Malchut Shemayim, that we have an obligation as Jews to accept the yoke of Shemayim upon us. And that's because it really is true that we don't always understand, when it comes to the Torah, what exactly is good for us or bad for us. We don't always understand it, but we're supposed to believe that everything that Hashem asks us to do is for the better, is for our good. And similarly, right, we're supposed to follow His words, right, regardless of whether we understand what He's saying, whether we think it's good, we don't think it's good, we understand, we don't understand. No, that we are a slave. And that is the point. We know that's the idea of Nasev and Ishma, that the Jewish people accepted to do the mitzvot, whether or not they understood them or not at that point. Obviously, you want to spend your life learning to try to understand, but we have to recognize that our acceptance of the mitzvot should never be dependent on whether we understand the mitzvot or not. There's a very famous medrash that has a very peculiar connection that talks about the mitzvah of ribbis, the mitzvah of not, or the lotase, of not charging interest to a fellow Jew. The Torah says, as kaspecha lo tzitin lo b'neshach, right, you shouldn't charge interest. Ani Hashem Elokecha mashor tzitzi etchem e'eretz Mitzrayim. The pasuk is in Vayikra Chafei, pasuk lamed zayin lamed chet, that you shouldn't charge interest. And the next pasuk says, I'm Hashem who took you out of Mitzrayim. The Medrash says a very cryptic statement that says, whoever accepts the yoke of the mitzvah of ribbis is accepting the yoke of Omachos Shemayim. And whoever rejects the mitzvah of ribbis is rejecting the yoke of Omachos Shemayim. Similarly, whoever accepts the mitzvah of ribbis is accepting Yitziat Mitzrayim, while those who reject it are rejecting Yitziat Mitzrayim. So what exactly does this mean, that if you accept ribbis, then you're accepting O Malchus Shemayim, and you're accepting Yitziat Mitzrayim, and if you don't accept ribbis, then you're not accepting Kabbalat O Malchus Shemayim, and you're not accepting Yitziat Mitzrayim? Obviously, history is history. We're not saying that you're not accepting the fact. But the Maharal has a very interesting explanation, where he says, when you look at the mitzvah of ribbis, of charging interest, so typically the charging of interest makes sense to both parties. I don't have money, you have money. I want to borrow money. I need money now. You have extra money. So I'm willing to pay a little extra now so that I could get money now. And again, you have reserves, so you're happy to lend it to me and make a little extra profit. That's the idea of ribis, of why we charge interest. The Torah says, no, you're not allowed to do that. Despite the fact that it could be beneficial to both parties, the Torah says that's not how we do things. And therefore, because it is true that it appears to be good for both parties, therefore, when we keep the mitzvah and we don't charge interest, we're going against our natural teva, against our natural tendencies. And that's what the Torah is trying to tell us, that the connection between ribis and Yetziat Mitzrayim is exactly our avdus to Hashem. That when we say that we're going to keep the mitzvah of ribis despite the fact that I don't understand quite why I can't do it, because really it's good for me, it's good for the other guy, what we're saying is that we're accepting the Torah no matter what. What we're saying is we're accepting Hashem's mitzvah no matter whether I understand or not. And again, that's the very essence of what Yetziat Mitzrayim is all about. And so just to end this part over here of Avad Emayinu, it's really important that as we go through the Seder, we recognize that the whole purpose of Yetziat Mitzrayim was for the Jewish people to become enslaved to Hashem, to get the Torah at Har Sinai, and having... So moving now on to the paragraph that comes next, Ma'isa Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azar, Rabbi Kiva, Rabbi Tarfon, and the famous story of the five Tanoim who were sitting, Shayum Esubim b'bnei Brak, Shayum Esabrim b'yitziat Mitzrayim kolosah halayla, right? They were up all night until their students came along and told them, Rabotenu, it's time for Kriya Shema. So there's a number of interesting things to talk about on this paragraph, just to start with some of the basics. So the Haggadah Chachmei Yerushalayim point out that these five individuals were not chosen at random. And we know that Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah were Kohanim. Rabbi Yeshua was a Levi, Rabbi Akiva was a Ger, was a convert. And therefore we might have thought that since the Kohanim, Levim, and Gerim were not part of the slavery, certainly not the hardship of the slavery in Mitzrayim, so we might think that they are not required to partake in this Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. And therefore comes along the Haggadah to tell us, no, these people, despite the fact that they weren't enslaved, they aren't obligated. They do have to do it. Even the Gerim, my Chazal tell us that all the Gerim who would eventually become Jewish, their neshamot were there at Har Sinai with us, and therefore they're all obligated. And that's why the Haggadah chooses these five people. So we mentioned that the language of the Haggadah is Shahayu Mesubim B'nei Brak. Typically that means Mesubim, like Haseba, to recline. We spoke about last week the obligation to recline, that there is, that you need to recline when eating the matzah and the dalakosot and so on. And therefore you might have translated this as reclining too, that they were reclining in B'nei Brak. Rabbi Saxon, his Haggadah quotes Rabbi Shimon ben Rabbi Tzemach, who says, no, Mesubin here doesn't mean reclining, it just means that they were sitting and eating. And what motivated him to say that? For two reasons. Number one, we know that Rabbi Eliez and Rabbi Yeshua were the Rebbeim of Rabbi Akiva, and there is a halacha that a student is not allowed to recline, not allowed to do Haseba in the presence of his Rebbe. And therefore, it wouldn't have made sense for them to be reclining in front of, or for Rabbi Akiva to be reclining in the presence of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Secondly, and this relates also to something we mentioned last week, that according to many poskim, during the reading of the Haggadah, during the Magid, you're not supposed to recline. Reclining is for the Dalakoso, for the Matzah, but during the Dalakoso, during the Magid, you should be sitting straight, Be'ema, Be'ira, with awe, and therefore it's not appropriate to be reclining. And that's another reason why he says that Mesubin here doesn't mean to recline. Again, not everyone agrees with that last part, and some say that you can recline while reciting the Haggadah, but nevertheless, that's debatable what that word means. The fun part of this conversation is, we know the Haggadah says, Vahiyu Mesaprim B'Yetziat Mitzrayim Kolosah HaLayla, right, that they were talking about it all night, that they were up all night talking about Yetziat Mitzrayim. So on that, there's a number of questions. And the first stems from the Gemara in Pesachim, which has a debate, first about the Korban Pesach. How late can you eat the Korban Pesach at the Seder night? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says you only have until Chatzot, which is halachic midnight. Rabbi Akiva says, no, you have all night up until Amud HaShachar, till the morning star is visible. The Gemara explains that the same debate refers to matzah or relates to matzah, and the Medrash says that the same debate applies to Sipri Yetziat Mitzrayim. So we have here a general machloket of whether or not, or what are the time restrictions around the mitzvot halayla, the Korban Pesach, the matzah, the Sipri Yetziat Mitzrayim. Do we have all night, as Rabbi Akiva would suggest, or do we have only until midnight or halachic midnight, as Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would suggest? And that's an important machloket. Again, we mentioned that a bit last week in terms of talking about the zmanim of the mitzvah halayla. The question that could be asked is, if Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Eliezer held that the mitzvah was over at midnight, so what were they doing staying up all night talking about Yetziat Mitzrayim? It seems to go against their general opinion. So there are a number of suggestions that we could throw out here, and I'll just suggest four of them quickly. The Netziv and the Meshech Chachma say yes, that they held that the mitzvah of Sipri Yetziat Mitzrayim ended at Chatzot, but the principle that we mentioned earlier of Kol Amar B'Lasapri B'Yetziat Mitzrayim Harizem Meshubach, excuse me, that the more the better, that applies even after Chatzot. So their actual obligation was over, but they still could partake in the Kol HaMarba. Number two, brought down by the Sefer Emek Bracha, says no, they weren't anymore fulfilling Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. That's over, according to their opinion, but the mitzvah of learning Hilchot Pesach still applies, and therefore they were learning Hilchot Pesach for the remainder of the night after Chatzot. Another one which Rav Soloveitchik suggests, and I believe others say that, suggest this too, and it's certainly the inference that you get when you read the text, and that is that we're asking too many technical questions. They were really not thinking about this. They were doing their mitzvah, and they got so engrossed in the conversation, right? Five great Torah giants were sitting together talking and learning that they totally got engrossed in the Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim and didn't realize what time it is. And therefore, it's not that they were impacting on their typical opinion over Sipur, yes, not Sipur, no. They were just engrossed in the conversation. And finally, an idea that's brought down by a number of Haggadot as well is that we know that where were they sitting? B'Bnei Brak, in B'Nai Brak. And we know from the Gemara that B'Nai Brak was Rabbi Akiva's town. He was the Rav of B'Nai Brak. And therefore, one could suggest that even though Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah disagreed with Rabbi Akiva in terms of this halacha, you know, when you're in the town of Rabbi Akiva, he's the Rav, so you follow the custom of the town, you follow the Rav of the town, and therefore, even though they personally disagreed, they went with Rabbi Akiva, and that's why they were continuing in Yetziat Mitzrayim, Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, even beyond Chatzot. One last point on this, he giyaz man kriyat shma shel shachris. So what does that mean exactly? That their students came along and told them, Rebbe, or Rabbeim, Rabotenu, it's time for Kriya Shema. So I think the typical understanding of this would mean, or people usually think it means, that it was coming to Sof Zman Kriya Shema. We know every day, by the end of the third hour, a person's obligated to have finished saying the Shema by Sof Zman Kriya Shema. And therefore, what they were coming in around 9 o'clock, 9:30, depending on the time and locale, is they were coming to say, Rebbe, Rabotenu, it's time to say Shema. If not, you're going to miss your opportunity. Right after that comes through, you don't fulfill the mitzvah of Shema properly. However, the Sefer Kilat Yaakov says no. They were coming right at Amud HaShachar, the morning star, when that's the first earliest time that you can say Shema. And they were coming to tell the Rabbeinu, it's time for Shema. You have to stop now. It's time. Ah, you might wonder, why do they have to stop? They have another 3 hours. So we know the Gemara says that even those Talmidei Chachamim who are Torah Umanuso, people who their livelihood is their Torah learning, meaning they learn full all the time, they nevertheless have to stop their learning to say Shema. They may not have to daven other parts of the davening in the clearest sense, but they do have to stop for Shema. And therefore, that was what the message here was, that they had to stop Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim to say Shema. Okay, moving to the next paragraph, which there's lots to talk about in terms of Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah, says that
Right, he looked like he was 70 years old. So there's lots to talk about here, but I'll just mention two points. Number one is the obvious question, really, it's two answers to the same question. What is this doing in the Haggadah? This has nothing to do with the Haggadah or Pesach night at all. It's not relevant. And therefore, what is it doing here? So one of my Rebbeim from Yeshiva University, Rabbi Sobolovsky, suggested that this is focused on the mitzvah Zechirat Yetziat Mitzrayim, right? We mentioned last week a number of distinctions between the mitzvah of Sipur and Zechira. And therefore, we mention in the Haggadah the mitzvah of Zechira, and we reiterate to ourselves that that's a mitzvah we have every day, just to show us how important Yetziat Mitzrayim is, that we even make it a mention or a part of the Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. Another explanation, perhaps, is it's the put here similarly to highlight the fact that this is not the mitzvah of Zechirah that we're doing now, but it's the mitzvah of Sipur. It's almost, so to speak, to make us ask the question that we asked last week, which is, what's the difference between Sipur and Zechirah? And with that, we mentioned last week a number of answers. Moving on to the next paragraph, Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu, where we bless Hashem, Baruch Shanasan Torah Le'amo Yisrael, that He gave us the Torah, and so on. So again, this paragraph seemingly looks out of place. What exactly is it doing here? So I once heard from Rav Schechter, and it's also quoted in the Haggadah of Rav Soloveitchik, that the purpose of this paragraph is as follows. We know there's a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that every day in the morning we say Berachas HaTorah, we say the special brachot of the Torah to allow us to learn Torah that day. Nevertheless, if a person gets an aliyah from the Torah on the days when there's laning, you make a separate Berachas HaTorah. Why? You already made Berachas HaTorah in the morning. Why do you have to make another one? So the halacha is explained that because that's a separate limud HaTorah, it's a special enactment, right? Enactment that was created that there should be Kriyas HaTorah on those days. It's not covered by the bracha that you made in the morning. And therefore, Rav Soloveitchik explains that since the Chachamim were mesakin here on Pesach, Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, through the drushos, the special learning of the psukim that we will get to late in a few paragraphs in the Haggadah of Tzeyu Lamad, and it really goes through all of the psukim and the makot and so on, so it's a special limud HaTorah, and therefore we need to say a Berachas HaTorah on this as well. In a similar vein, we could suggest the famous question that people ask, why is there no bracha on Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim? We have a bracha on all the other mitzvot halayla. Why don't we have a bracha on Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim? Again, there are other answers to that question, but for the time being, we could suggest that perhaps, even though we don't say Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam here, this paragraph is serving as the brachas hamitzvah on Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim. Then moving along to the Aravonim, let's talk a little bit about this, although I really recommend, there's so much to talk about here. I'm just going to give you one source to take a look at. There's a Sefer Haggadah called Hagione Haggadah by Rav Mirsky, and there he really, really outlines the differences between the way our Haggadah reports the conversations between the Chacham, the Rosh, the Tam, and Sheni De Elishol, what their question was, what our answer is, and he highlights the distinctions and differences between the Haggadah and the way it's found in the Chumash. I really recommend you take a look there for his explanation, because there really is quite a number of fascinating things. I just want to touch on a few things here. I'll start with the famous words of the Maharal. He asks the following questions. Of course, why these four sons? The obvious question of why is it Chacham in Russia? It would make more sense to be Tzaddik in Russia, right? Chacham is more of a description, it sounds like, of one's wisdom, and as opposed to Russia is describing a person's character traits. So it would have been better to say Tzaddik for Russia. And finally, just in terms of looking at the psukim, why is that, and the conversation of the people, wouldn't it make sense to put the Rasha at the end? Why do we put him number two? So the Maharal says essentially there are four types of people in the world. There's a person who acquires knowledge because he's always looking, he's always seeking it out. Even what's not in front of him, obviously what's in front of him he asks questions about, but he even seeks out other information and keeps asking, what does Hashem want from me? There's another person who just asks about what's coming his way, what's in front of him. That's it. He doesn't seek out knowledge of anything else, doesn't try to discover anything else. He's not the hugest chacham, but he's not ignorant either. This is the description of the Tam. He's someone who doesn't want to lower himself, but he doesn't necessarily want to keep growing to higher levels. And therefore, the Haggadah, just to him, talks about what's different about this night. Pesach Matzah Maror, we give him some information. Pesach Matzah Maror was what in front of us. Then we have the third person, the She'enu Deo Lishol. This is someone, he doesn't know anything. He doesn't even know how to ask. He doesn't notice that our weird things are going on. And therefore, all we talk to him about is the matzah. The matzah is the quintessential mitzvah of the night. Sums up all of Sipri Tzis Mitzrayim. And then we have the Rasha, who is the exact opposite of the Chacham. Not only does he not seek out knowledge, but he seeks out heretical thoughts. He tries to convince others that they shouldn't believe in the Torah. He distorts the Torah, and so on. And therefore, when he says, Mahavoda hazos lachem, to you, lachem v'lolo, he's trying to separate himself from the Kal Yisrael, and therefore we give him a harsh response because he's really not interested in any answers. And that's why if we take a look at the order, we start with the Chacham because that's what we all aspire to be. We aspire to be the best Jews that we can who constantly seek out more Torah, more information, better ways of improving ourselves, and so on. Then we go to the Rasha to show that the Rasha is actually the opposite of the Chacham. He's someone with similar qualities, but have flipped it the wrong way. And in fact, other Mefarshim point out that the Rasha in some ways could be better than the Tam and the She'enu Yodea, certainly better than the She'enu Yodea Lishol, because She'enu Yodea Lishol, almost to a certain extent, doesn't have any hope to get any better. Whereas the Rasha, if we flick the right switch, could become a Chacha much more easily. And then after that, after the Chacham and the Rasha, then we go in order, Tam and then She'enu Yodea Lishol. Focus just for a minute on the Chacham. So we know that we answer the Chacham, Ein maftirin achar ha-pesach afi kolman. So he's asking, what are the halachos, maha edus v'hachukim v'mishpatim, asher tziva Hashem, that Hashem commanded us? And we tell him about, don't eat after eating the afi kolman, that you're supposed to have the tam of the afi kolman on your mouth the whole night. So why is that the response? So first of all, the Vilna Gaon has a slightly different text to the Haggadah. He adds in one very important word, ad. So it says, Ava termel kilchas pesach ad ein maftir nachar pesach avikomen, which means that you teach the Chacham all of Hilchas Pesach up until the very last Mishnah in the Masechta of Psachim, which talks about this idea of ein maftir nachar pesach avikomen. So we're not actually teaching him just this halacha, but we're teaching him all of Hilchas Pesach up until that point. Okay. Others suggest that what's the difference between the Chacham and the Rasha? Rav Salvechik points this out, that if you look at the text of the Chumash, when we answer the Chacham, we say, Avadim ayinu leparav b'mitzrayim, right? We were slaves, Yotziyinu Hashem b'mitzrayim, Hashem took us out. And then it says, Vayitzaveinu Hashem la'asod et kol achukam ha'ilu yirat Hashem elokeinu. So the Torah says two things. Number one, that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim from slavery, and number two, that He commanded us to keep the mitzvos. We skip in the Haggadah the first part. We don't focus on that in the answer to the Chacham, because that's true for all of the four sons. We focus only on the second part, and that is that Hashem commanded us to keep the mitzvos, and therefore we focus on the mitzvot. The other question we can ask on the Rasha is, again, Mahavudah hazot lachem, lachem v'lo lo. So there's a play on that word, lachem. So didn't the Chacham say something similar? Asher tziva Hashem elokeinu eschem. So why is it that we think the Rasha uses the word lachem, and all of a sudden he's a blasphemer and he is trying to separate himself? We don't think about that from the Chacham's point of view. So the Haggadah of Rashi has one simple suggestion, that the Chacham already says Asher tziva Hashem elokeinu. So clearly he was not trying to separate himself from that. He was focused on Hashem. The Or Chaim says, slightly different vein, that etchem actually means imachem, so that the translation of the word is different. Etchem here doesn't mean you, it means with you. And therefore, clearly the Chacham is not trying to separate himself out. And finally, let's just focus on the next paragraph of the Haggadah, Yachol Mirosh Chodesh, that I might have thought that I can fulfill the mitzvah Sipri Yetzias Mitzrayim from Rosh Chodesh Nisan already, but I can't, says the Haggadah Talmud Lomer, Bayom Ahu. I need it by Yom Ahu. Maybe I could do it by day. Talmud Lomar Ba'avor Zeh. No, only Bashat Sheyesh Matzah Umar Munachem Lefanacha. So the obvious question is, why would you have ever thought that you can fulfill the mitzvah, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, by day, during the, from Rosh Chodesh? It's a mitzvah on Pesach night. It's not the Seder yet. So a couple of approaches. Number one, perhaps we could say that the whole month of Nisan is a time in our tradition that is the time of the Mesorah of Emunah in Hashem, right? As the Nativ points out, the Torah says, "B'chodesh ha'aviv yatzata mi-Mitzrayim," right? It's in this month that we came out of Mitzrayim. So therefore, we might have thought that the entire month is ripe for discussing Yetziat Mitzrayim. Rav Soloveitchik has a different approach, where he quotes the Rambam, who says, based on the mitzvah that we've mentioned before of Zechira, Zachoras Yom HaShar, Yetzata Mitzrayim, remember the day. Similarly, the Rambam says to the mitzvah of Kiddush on Shabbos, Zachorat Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. And Rashi on that pasuk says that the mitzvah of Zachor on Shabbos is not just the mitzvah of Kiddush, but it's a mitzvah to constantly have Shabbos in our mind during the week. If you see a nice food, you should buy it, have it in mind for Shabbos, and so on. In fact, some of the rabbis in the Gemara were known that they would find something on Sunday, buy it for Shabbos, having in mind covered Shabbos. The next day, they would find something even nicer. They would use the thing they had bought the day before and save this thing for the for Shabbos, and so on, constantly having Shabbos on their mind. So Rav Soloveitchik explains that similarly, we might have thought that this idea of remembering the day we left Mitzrayim would allow us to say that this is applying the entire month, Zachor, to remember even, you know, a little bit ahead of time, as that redemption is beginning in this month. We might have thought that comes along the Haggadah that says, no, Bayom Mahu can only be the night of the Seder. And finally, Ibayom Mahu Yachol Mi Ba'od Yom. So we could say that, okay, fine, it has to be that day, but it has to be it can't be earlier in the month, but maybe it's the day of Erev Pesach. Who says it has to be at night? So similarly, why would you have ever thought it could be by day? So three approaches. The Rashbat says that the Geula began on Rosh Chodesh. You might think that you could start any time after that. Okay, that's similar to what we said a minute ago. The Rashbam says, wait a minute. We all know that the mitzvah of the shechting, the slaughtering of the Korban Pesach, was done on Erev Pesach, in the afternoon or after midday. So again, perhaps we could start at that time already, because there's clearly a connection to what we're doing at night begins at midday already. And finally, the Sefer Meir Le'olam says that, no, it only means during this Zman of Tosafet. If we were to add time after Plag HaMincha, late in the day of Erev Pesach, that maybe you could have started at that time. Right? Maybe you could start Pesach early the way you start every other Shabbos and Yom Tov potentially early, and therefore comes along the Haggadah to tell us no.